You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, golf fans, number one. Of course, y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank, presented by iHeartRadio, right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt and the man with the best hands in the podcast business, OJ McDuffie. Juice, I know you like the offensive side of the ball. I know how you feel about the defensive side of the ball. But be careful now when you answer this one. How are you feeling about today's guest?
Big Seth, you know how I feel about the defensive side of the ball. You know, of course I love the offensive side. But when it comes to the defensive side, I'm looking for guys like this that I know I could vibe with.
Got it.
You know what I mean? I'm an offensive guy that is defensive mind at heart. You know what I mean?
Love it.
We've talked about this, Big Seth.
We have.
You know I'm really a defensive guy that had to play offense,
right,
man.
Right, right. Is that what it was? No, you told me you were cool with the defensive players. I didn't know you were a defensive guy.
Defensive
okay.
mind.
Okay, all right. We'll go with that. So without further ado, our guest today is the head coach of the Eureka College Red Devils. They're still the Red Devils, right? I want to make sure I'm using the right term. The Red Devils. And also happens to be an all-time Miami Dolphins great. He is Randy Starks. Randy, welcome to the Fish Tank.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the Fish Tank. Glad to be here.
Yeah, man. Randy, you know what? I think people lose sight of how impressive your Miami Dolphins career was when you were here. You know, 7 seasons, 2 Pro Bowls, 30 and a half sacks, 4 interceptions. I didn't know you had hands, big fella, but I think that proves it right there, right? That you have hands. I mean, you did your thing in Aquan Orange, and we have so much to talk about, but through all of our research, we have to start off with this. We have to start off with the fact, and we can't ignore this, Big Seth. You were neighbors with Channing Crowder?
Yes, I was.
There's no way to start this thing off without talking about Channing Crowder and you as neighbors. I mean, that's got to be the best storyline ever to get things started with, right?
He wasn't the same person as he was in the locker room. Like you see him on his podcast, all different shows he's on. A family man, great guy in the neighborhood. But all the stories I had was in the locker room.
Oh, yeah, that's all you want to talk about. Don't give me that, Randy. Don't give me that shit, man. Because I know neighbors like you two next to each other had to be something a little bit more entertaining than just a locker room.
I'm telling
stuff,
you, man, he wasn't that type of person, man. He was a family man. He was good. I see him every now and then. And I think at that time I was still playing ball. He was doing his thing, his little radio show. So we crossed paths a little bit, but you want to hear some stories, it's the locker room. I'm pretty sure knowing him, you already heard all the stories.
I'm going to tell you this, Randy. He says he had a problem with your dogs in his yard. I mean, that's what we heard from him. Tell us about your dogs in his yard and then making it their personal bathroom.
First of all, I need receipts on that, all right? I can't believe everything you say. You know you like to talk trash, but I need receipts. Pull the cameras up. But you know, I had old English bulldogs in there time to time. You know, they might get out the gate. You know, they're not aggressive dogs. They probably smell his dog. You know, they try to play, you know. You don't want to let them in. It's hot in Florida. Hey, they'll take a crap, you know.
Facts. I love it. I love it.
That's too good. Well, I definitely want to get at some point to the Starks and Crowder stories, which – It almost sounds like one of those old TV cop shows, right? Starks and Crowder.
Oh, yeah.
I can only imagine
sure.
what that was like. But there's something else. There you go. See, that guy's doing everything. He's doing stand-up comedy. He's selling his Crowder powder. He might be ready for a TV show as well. So that could be good stuff. But there's something else that I couldn't wait to ask you about. Because in the beginning stages of this show, we not only talked about the Dolphins, but we used to talk about these epic basketball games at OJ's house. Because Juice, his former house had this full court basketball court. It was actually, it felt like it was longer than NBA length, Juice, because I go up and down one time, and I know I wasn't in great shape to begin with, but I was gassed. So point is, we love talking hoops. And you grew up in Waldorf, Maryland, where you attended Westlake High.
Correct.
Shout out to the Wolverines, right?
There you go.
Which, by the way, were their colors orange and aqua? Did I see that?
Yes,
the
you best believe I got love. You know what I'm saying? Once I came, can't get away from the colors. Like, yeah.
Man, like you don't see that much in high school and in Maryland
especially
of all places.
Colors.
So that was really cool. Right. That's my point. But I'm not surprised that when you were in high school, you were a super prep All-American defensive tackle. I expect that. You played at the highest level in the NFL. I expect that. But what did catch me off guard was the fact that you were a serious hooper, Juice. Like, I'm not just saying, oh, he lettered in basketball. You tell me all football players think they're basketball players, and I've seen that. But I'm talking about a dude who scored more than 1,000 career points in high school, more almost 700 rebounds. You led your team to a 23-3 record as a senior, and you were the Southern Maryland Basketball Player of the Year, according to the Washington Post. Tell us about this hoop game, Randy.
Wow. First of all, everybody think they're going to be a basketball player, right? Everybody think they're a hooper. And so, say about ninth grade, you know, same height. And when my football coach was like, you think you're going to NBA? What you think you're about to be 6'10"? He was like, you're done growing. You're a football player that happens to play basketball. Like, stop thinking that. And so, but, you know, I was right now I have unlimited, right, as far as Pop Warner football, stuff like that. When I was growing up, they didn't have that. It was everything was water weight, so I couldn't play. So the only thing I could play was basketball. And, you know, using the agility and athleticism playing basketball just carried over to the football field. And a lot of guys, I tell them, like, man, I used to play basketball. They're like, you coach? Like, yeah, I used to play. Like, I just went on the winning team. Like, I was the best player on the team. Like, I was doing my thing now, you know? So.
Right.
But Randy, best player on the
you
team.
You know what, Seth? You know,
he was player of the year. Yeah. Like, player of the year.
Right. He's better than the best player on the team. He's the best player in the area, right.
And,
in the whole area.
And that wasn't voted on by, like, the community news. That's the Washington Post.
I mean, I knew what I was good at, right? I know what I can do. And I know I'm not going to jump somebody that's 6'6", you know? No, I'm going to body you up. Then you put a big guy on me, I'm going to take him out outside the paint and take him to the hole. Like, I just know what to do. And my whole thing about my team was, it wasn't just my nickname was Bread Truck at the time. So it wasn't just give him the ball. Nah, like, you play your game, you know, because at the end of the day, you're going to shoot. I'm going to get that board. I'm going to put it back up. Once I get that board, you're not getting it back. That's all me.
You know what, Big Seth, it reminds us of course, Mark Dixon, that we know that played in the trenches at inside-outside game like that. Also, obviously, reminds me of a lot of football players who feel like they could have played basketball if they would have been a little bit taller, you know, and that's just a fact. But here's the thing about it, though. You got a guy right here, and I want to ask you this, Randy, because I played basketball right after football. Did your football program leak into your basketball season and your team struggled because you weren't there yet? Because, like, did you guys go what far in the playoffs in high school? Because my team always started off like 0-5 because the football players are still playing basketball players are still playing football at that point.
We never really made a deep run in football. So I used to come straight in, like, coaches tell me, yeah, I'll give you a week or two, you know, the wind down. I was like, nah, I'm going to basketball. I'm waiting for this anyway. I was ready for football to be over. I was tired. I'm trying to go ahead with less physical, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to be the bully out here.
Right.
I'm good. But I tell you right now, that first week was the hardest part. You guys were talking about all that. You in shape? You play football? Nah, that thing different. That thing is different. Like, my shots off. I'm running up and down the court, tired. And the coach was like, don't worry about it. You'll get it back. But that first week was tough. I tell you that.
It's so crazy, man, because you think you played a whole football and all season of football. And then next thing you know, all right, let's go to basketball. And that first week, you're gassed. It doesn't matter what kind of shape you were in football because basketball is a different animal.
So were you, you know, you're describing your game. Were you like power forward? Was that the position? I mean, if you were taking guys outside.
Well, my senior year, I was power forward. My junior year, I was center. We played with four guards. And so I was on the big
four guards and throw and dump it in the bread truck.
Yep, just dump in the big truck. I do what you need me to do. I guarantee I wake up 20-12. You know what I'm saying? I just wake up. Like, I'm coming to the gym. Give me 20-12. Anything else plus, you know? This is my game.
I love it.
You know, and I was playing with young guys. And then my sophomore year, I was playing varsity. We had a guy that was 6'8", 6'9". And so, you know, I just played power forward with a bunch of guards. I was the only underclassman playing. Everybody else was seniors. And I just grew my game from there.
Love it.
So my question is, living in the paint like that, or possibly outside, they had a big guy on you where you used your quickness. How were you from the foul line?
Ooh.
Game to game. I'm not going to lie. Like,
there it is.
I might give you 8-9 one game. I might come back 2-7, you know?
Okay. I'm not
okay. That's fair.
But I pull a Shaq. Okay. I hit it when it mattered. You know what I'm saying? Well, the matter right, I made. Okay. Fourth quarter, I'm giving you those two. It. You know, I just I gave you.
Too good.
But the beauty about right, it is I was right. giving a lot of and ones, so I'm giving you two for sure.
So they weren't hanging on you like they should have, man.
Football players, kind of like LeBron, you know.
Yeah.
They let stuff slide. And if I hit them too hard, they'll Business fall. Decisions. You know how it is. I was taking football and bringing it on the basketball court. That was my game. Like, I know what I need to do. Make it physical.
Right.
I couldn't imagine going in the paint with big stars.
Oh, my God.
I did all that stuff. I was never too good.
I'll just do the pull-up. I'm just going to do the pull-up jumper and hope it goes, man.
Even and I tell you, I was the guy that dived on the floor, too. I dive on the floor. I do all that.
Oh, it's so funny you say that because I was just thinking about that the other day. It might be one of the dumbest drills in basketball when they do that loose ball drill. I mean, that makes no sense. But you're a guy that was willing to do that.
I play
huh?
football. I'm used to falling on the ground. I'm not going to come up with a cherry.
Not on that surface, though, Randy.
I know what I'm doing. I'm good.
But see, this tells me right here, you try to talk about this defensive mindset that you had, Juice. There's a difference. The defensive guys.
Well, there's some point guards that ain't getting on the ground either, though, Big Seth.
Oh, if you're on my squad, you're getting
that's
on that
my
ground.
Point, guard.
You're getting on there. Nah.
I'm going to try to scoop a score, Randy. That's all I care about, man. I'm not trying to get on the ground. And you know, it's a travel anyways nowadays. So anyways.
Yeah.
Let's go back to this Maryland thing because, Big Seth, I give you a hard time all the time. And, Randy, we just had Nolan Carroll on the show, and I was giving Big Seth a hard time about, you know, Nolan choosing Maryland over Seth's Florida Gators. And that was fun. I was laughing a lot about that until I see you chose the University of Maryland over my Penn State Nittany Lions. How'd that happen, dog?
Go back in time. Okay. So, like I told you, I was a big basketball. I thought I was going to do both in college, so I had Syracuse on my list. And Syracuse, at the time, they was good at football and basketball. That's my dream. I always want to go to Syracuse. Of course, I'd probably around this time, well, I know I'm not going to do both, but he was a nice school. Penn State, because Larry Johnson, great guy, great person overall. Definitely, parents going to love him. So, that was on my list. And then Maryland, I'm going to Maryland. I know right now, I'm going to Maryland. I'm going to play. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just thinking mindset of playing and close to home. My family, my mom, she get to come see me play pretty much every weekend. So that was the decision I had to make, and I chose Maryland.
Man, you could have came to Penn State and been a football and basketball star. It didn't take much to be a basketball star at Penn State.
I think at the time, you weren't playing freshman. I think it's mandatory. Every guy's playing red shirt, right? I think at the time, yeah. Red shirt was a big deal.
No, depends, man. You big stars.
Juice, you trying to still recruit him? I don't think he has any eligibility.
Man, I think he might have a year, Big Seth. I'm looking for 1 year. That's all I'm asking for, man.
Oh, that's funny. You know? That is funny. Look, he made a good choice, right, in going to Maryland, and the fact that he was one of the most dominant defensive players in the ACC during your time there. However, you decide to forego your senior season and you enter the draft, right? So then next thing you know, you're only a 20-year-old guy, which is crazy when you think about it now. In the moment, you're probably just living life. But you're 20 years old. You're in the NFL. You're playing for the Tennessee Titans. I just, in researching for this, I heard you on another interview say that when you look back now, being in the position that you're in life, that you wish you had invested more in yourself during that time. Like, obviously, you were a talented guy. You don't get drafted in the National Football League, and then you're starting by your second year if you can't play. And you said you were around veteran leadership, but you maybe didn't take as much in. You didn't invest in yourself. And so now, as a head coach that is trying to show young men the way, are you in a position where you kind of realize, hey, I didn't do all the things that I could have done. I could have trained differently. I could have prepared differently. Do you have that reflection?
I definitely do. Sitting back and looking at everything. I think what makes me a good coach is my rap sheet is not perfect. You know what I'm saying? I had some bumps in the road, you know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, I was able to come out of that. And so I just try to use those life lessons, the good and the bad, to help these other guys coming up, these student athletes coming up, so they don't make the same mistake. You know, my whole thing is let's make some new ones so when the next guys behind you come, we make sure they don't make those mistakes, right? And so that's the whole thing with me. I was just living in the moment, just enjoying myself at 20. Heck, I was 20 years old. I couldn't get into the bars. I couldn't buy alcohol, you know. I remember some of the guys made me get some on the plane, stuff like that. It was a good experience, but at the end of the day, it's almost like you got to invest in yourself. And I was investing in myself. I know some guys like, man, at this time, I'm not paying $5,000-$10,000 for a chef or a personal trainer. But looking back, that's investing in yourself. That's putting it back into yourself, you know, longevity, taking care of your body. I wasn't looking at that. But yet, I'll go spend that $5,000-$10,000 on a trip. And not going to get that back. Good memories, you know what I'm saying? I spend that in the club, you know what I'm saying? Good memories, but today I'm not investing that in myself. And that's something I try to tell these guys. You know, even here at D3, I tell these guys, man, it's education, invest in yourself. You spend all this money, make sure you do the right thing. And that's one thing I would tell guys, like, invest in yourself, spend that money on yourself. Hey, I think I seen someone, LeBron James, spent over $1 million on his body. You know what I'm saying? That's an investment. That's what it is.
Well, he can. You
know what I'm saying? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, any professional athlete can do that.
And a lot of these guys can too now, right?
It might not be $1 million.
Yeah. Not that much. You know what I'm saying?
But
you can
spend 10, 20 grand and get it on the back end when it's time to re-up the contract. You know what I'm saying? Add extra 5, 10 years. Right. I mean, a year to your playing career. You're going to get that 20 grand back. You know, so something simple as that.
No, it makes sense. The other thing, Juice, that he said in this interview, which I thought would be really interesting because you did live this, was that Randy said he was very happy now, looking back, that he didn't get drafted and have to be 20 years old in Miami, that he got to have at least a four-year buffer in Tennessee before he made it down to Miami. Now, Randy, my partner here, got drafted in the first round at 20-something years old and comes down to South Florida. Hey,
Randy, here we go. Randy, we go through this episode, man.
My point is that you had to navigate that thing that Randy says, man, I'm just glad, because it still was a lot, right? Your point was it was still a lot, even for a guy that had 4 years in the league and had grown up a little bit. If at 20 you had been dumped into South Florida as having money for the first time and all these other things, that might have been a bit much.
Man, you can just see guys now, with NBA, rappers, whatever, you get some of this money at 20 years old, you do dumb stuff. And so even coming in Miami, I'm 24. Some guys might even come in the league at 24. I would say I was blessed to have veterans in Tennessee, whether it was Albert Hainsworth, Keith Bullock, Kevin Carter, Samari Rowe. So I had young guys to kind of show me what to do. You know what I'm saying? So then when I got to Miami, I still had Jason
Crowder
Ferguson
showed
there.
You what to do.
Nah. It took me about a year to warm up to him. Yeah. I might not have made it. No, but I was blessed to have veteran guys that kind of helped me and showed me the way. Still coming to Miami, 24 years old, still young. So, like I said, if I would have came straight to Miami, nah, I wouldn't have finished that first contract for sure. Knowing myself, no.
Yeah, yeah, you know what? And I get it, bro. I still haven't grown up, and I've been living here since I was forever ago. Anyhow, Miami's a tough deal. You know what, Seth? This is a Dolphins show. Let's talk a little more Dolphins right here. So, Randy, 2008 rolls around, and you're an unrestricted free agent for the first time in your career. And you choose to sign with the Miami Dolphins, a team that's coming off a 1-15 season and featuring a first-year head coach in Tony Sperano. Why Miami at that point?
It broke me off. That's why. What you mean? Shoot.
I guess it's an easy answer.
Nah, but serious.
That's the realest shit, Seth. That's the realest.
You give me. You giving up some bread? South Florida, Miami. I see what it looked like on TV. Let me go check it out myself. I might have went for a weekend or something. Now I get to live there? What do I sign?
That's so real. That's so fucking real.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, yeah. You're damn right. And I feel you, man. I mean, unfortunately, when I was coming out, I wanted to go close to home, which is Cleveland or Pennsylvania, or warm. And warm might have been the worst thing that ever happened to me coming down here to Miami. You know what I mean? No, it was honestly, man, I feel what you're talking about. A lot of guys vacation here. A lot of guys have a house here. And then actually be able to do both, to work and play here. Pretty easy decision most of the time,
definitely,
right?
It is. You know, it was a great time. Yeah. Great experience. I went fishing more often than I usually would go. I mean, it was just a great experience overall. You know, I'm glad. I don't know how things are now, but I'm glad the facility was out the way of where everything is. I'll say that.
Yeah, it's a little closer now.
It's getting closer to it's getting closer to where everything is now. Yeah,
it's right by the stadium. Like there, it's if you go out on the practice field, the stadium is right there on the other side of the goalposts.
Oh,
yeah,
yes, you're closer to Miami. Yeah, you're a lot closer to Miami. Guys like us, though, especially myself, man, I wasn't mature enough at times to handle Miami. But I think these guys now, they get it a little bit different in terms of, you know, because I would be, with the money they make, Randy, right now, I don't know if they could keep me off South Beach at a young age, man. But these guys do a great job of doing so.
I mean, different programs, meetings, seminars, stuff like that. I think NFL, especially NFLPA, they're doing a good job with that. And I think educating these guys is helping. Yeah. And, you know, I think that stuff started when I first came in the league. And so I was kind of hearing some of it. But for me, the main thing was the guys in the locker room. That's where I got my guidance from. And I think that's changing and starting to help as far as saving your money and doing the right thing. Because at the end of the day, you can't do anything wrong without being posted on social media. So I think that's, you know, everybody's starting to keep their nose clean more than they normally would.
Yeah. You know, Randy, another thing, though, while you were here that was interesting to me as well, you know, I've always thought of you as a tackle. You were actually labeled as a defensive end, you know, for, I think, the first 3 years here with the Dolphins. Talk about the move from the 3-4 front and what that, the impact it had on your game at that point.
All right. So Tennessee, I was 4-3. I played nose and tackle. So when I got to Miami, I didn't know anything about 3-4, nothing. So they put me in. All right, whatever. So I'm playing in, I didn't know anything. And 4-3, you can pretty much, your gap, you hit it. 3-4, you need me to 2-gap. I didn't know anything about 2-gap, but all I know is where you line me up, that's my gap. Where nah, you want me to squeeze the backside gap and still make that play. So that whole transition was bad to where when they first brought me in, I was basically a nickel guy. You know what I'm saying? So I was pretty much a 4-2. And that's where they put me. But as the season went on, I started learning. I started making more plays. I started gaining their trust. So that's when I came in my second year, and that's when pretty much blossomed. My career kind of took off from there. But it was a hard transition. That's what the defense I like to run here in general is a 3-4 because you just also – you still make it like a 4-3. But that transition, I mean, if you got the studs to do it, I think that's a great defense to do. But for the most part, once I was in Miami, I mean, you can put me anywhere. You put me in, you put me in 3, you can put me in 1. Somebody go down, boom, they stick me inside. I could pretty much do it all because at the end of the day, I didn't have to be 330, 340 pounds to play nose. You know what I'm saying? I was already weight room strong. I have strong legs. I could hold a point. I play with great pad level. You know, that was my strength. I knew my strength word is playing pad level and using my hand. Now, am I going to beat somebody on the edge, on the end? No, I'm not. But I collapsed that pocket, so I pretty much knew how to use my abilities to my advantage.
Interesting stuff.
Good stuff, man. That's a teaching tool right there, Big Seth.
It's Coach Starks right here, man. Yeah,
we got to clip that right there and sell it to these high schools
for sure. And Travis Wingfield, because he's going to go nuts over it for sure.
Yeah. Travis
also does a podcast for the Dolphins. He's kind of the main, does the daily podcast, but he's a big X's and O's guy, so he's going to love hearing this. So another thing that happened on the other side of the ball that to me was very interesting in that first year goes back to week 3. So as Drew said, when you got here, the Dolphins were coming off a 1-15 season. You start 0-2. You lose the first 2 games of the season. Then week 3, you got to go to New England. New England's 2-0, but they also won 16 straight the previous year. So it just looked like it was not going to be a great situation. But what none of us knew, that you guys apparently knew was going on behind the scenes, was that the Dolphins were drawing up a little bit of a they had a plan to try and do something different and get their best players on the field on the offensive side of the ball. So the game starts the way we'd probably expect it, Juice. New England, early in the first quarter, they're marching down the field. But then those hands come up like you're talking about. Matt Castle tries to throw a little screen.
And
you see the smile. Look at there you go, dust it off. So you get a pick. You get the ball back. You thwart that drive, right? And the Dolphins start to march down the field. And in that first drive, as they get close to the end zone, all of a sudden, Ronnie Brown, he's not lined up as a tailback. He's lined up as a quarterback in the shotgun. Talk to us about the Wildcat, because Channing has talked about what he saw in practice, and he said the defensive players were like laughing at this thing up until the point they finally pulled it out in that New England game.
Well, at this time, I think we had 3 good running backs. Maybe they was trying to figure out a way to get everybody on the field, get your best players on the field. And did I think yep. that this would be like a red zone play, fourth and one type of play? Of course. But I didn't think it would be a staple, you know, saying something that our offense is using daily. Like, that was our thing. Like, when it came to it, offense was stale, we couldn't really move the Wildcat. And that's what we did. That's what we went to. And I think Ronnie Brown made a Pro Bowl off that because nobody could stop it. I mean, it's a trend, right? So once we did it, everybody started doing it. And so it's one of those things, like, we was the first one to do it. Nobody could stop it. And you couldn't have an answer for it because at the end of the day, nobody really – when you're doing a run box, nobody's counting the quarterback. He's not counting for it. So now you got him as a running back. Then we start throwing a little pass off of that. I mean, we just changed the game. And you don't know when we're going to do it because Chad Pennis is still – was on the field. Right. You have your check to it, but at the end of the day, we start throwing power, start throwing counter, zone, jet sweeps. We start throwing everything on there. You know, everything is what? NFL breakdowns every four games. So every four, we're doing something new.
What was that like for you? Because, again, a couple other guys, defensive guys, have talked about how you guys were just killing it in practice. It looked like it had no shot. And when you saw them for the first time, you're standing there on the sidelines, and you see them line up in that, and then they just start gashing the Patriots, and there's no answer for it. What was that like for you to be on the sideline watching that happen?
I mean, it felt really good. You know, it's the Patriots, so it's one of those things like, all right, they're going to make a run. They're going to make a run. But the defense couldn't get off the field. Ronnie just kept going. Richie just kept going. I want to say one of them had probably 200 yards that game, maybe. I know some big numbers in that
Ronnie
game.
Had four touchdowns that day.
Some big numbers.
Yeah. Couldn't stop threw them. One. Defense.
But there's also short fields, though, Randy, because you guys had also provided, I think, a couple of short fields, right, Big Seth?
Yeah, defense was tough that day, too. They couldn't get anything going, for sure.
It sure were.
The offense made it easier, right? They're holding the ball, clock management. Yeah. Now we up. Now you have to throw the ball. Now, go get them. You know how it is.
Right.
I always love it when the offense can hold up their end of the bargain, man. When the offense is doing their thing, it always seems to work out better for the defense. Sometimes when the defense isn't doing their thing, the offense has to do something. But usually the defense is doing their thing. And in my experience, especially late in my career, the offense was not holding up their end of the bargain, man. So it's nice to see that happen, you know, when you're sitting on the bench and getting a breather, right?
You know, it's a difference. When the offense is doing their thing, it makes the other team one-dimensional, right? Versus when the defense is doing the thing, it's kind of like they can still go through their game plan. They can still go through their chart type of thing. You know, so once the offense is doing the thing, it throws everything out of whack.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Playing catch up. That's why New England was so good all the time. They were doing both in the first quarter, up 10-0, up 14-0. Next thing you know, the team that they're playing against is playing catch up.
Got to go off script. Start grabbing stuff they haven't ran 5 weeks.
Right.
Do you remember when we used to, you remember when we put this in?
Love it.
Got to draw it up on the board and stuff. You can't even pull it up from the game plan. You got to draw it up again. Like, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
That's funny.
Randy, let's talk about, you know, some of the guys that you play with here in Miami. I mean, what an incredible list. Of course, we've already talked about Channing Crum being on defense, but you also play with everyone from JT, Joey Porter, Vonnie Holiday, Matt Roth, and everyone has had a Matt Roth story, so I know you have to have.
We got here
have
a Matt
to have
Roth
a
story.
Matt Roth story. Everybody's had one. Cam Wake, of course, Paul Soliai, Jared Odrick, and OV. The list goes on and on, man. Talk about that group of guys. And if you do have a Matt Roth anything, please
we're
share
here for
because
it.
Everybody's been.
Yeah,
like,
that's why I already heard them all, man.
Yeah. Well, not personally with you though. It's all one on one things.
I didn't have a problem with him.
No, not a problem. Not a problem. Definitely not a problem. Talk about those guys, man.
We just had a different group. Like I said, when I came in, I was in 24. Had Joey Porter, Jason Ferguson, Will Allen. So I had a lot of veteran guys, and so I just kind of follow their lead for the most part. And it's kind of like, I remember Jason Ferguson looking at me like, wait a minute, hold up. You 24? Like, he had reminded himself, like, yeah, I've been playing a long time, but nah, you still young. Like, they said, no wonder you still quiet. I'm like, yeah, I just sit back. I'd like to observe, see what's going on. You know what I'm saying? Later in my career, that's when OV, Paul Soler, all these other guys are starting to come in. I had to take them under my wing. Deion Jordan, different guys. And the room started changing to where now, instead of me watching everybody else and following, it's like, nah, they looking to me now to say, hey, what should we do? How should we handle this situation? And I just used all the material, all the information that was given to me throughout the year, having a veteran group, and used that and passed it down.
What is that like? We just talked, Xavier Howard was on the show earlier in the season, and I think he was going into his eighth year, right, Juice? And he was the longest tenured guy. Yeah, and he talked about that. Well, number one, you're bridging gaps between different eras of Dolphins football, which is interesting in and of itself. But this idea that it's almost like overnight you go from being the young guy to the guy people are turning to, and it's kind of jarring in a way.
Yeah, it forced me to be more vocal. It brought to my attention that guys are watching everything that I'm doing. They want to make sure see if I'm doing it. So I have to make sure I'm doing everything right. I remember one time one of my coaches told me, like, my whole thing was I come in the weight room in the morning, I start complaining, you know, start talking trash. But at the end of the day, they know that's how I get going, and they know that's how I get my motor going and I start doing the work. And one had to pull me aside. I was like, hey, man, we know this is what you do. Like, we know you're going to work hard. You're going to show. We know this. But, man, please be careful, because some of these young guys don't know that you're just joking and they're paying attention and they think they can do that. It's like, all right. So that kind of opened my eyes right there.
So, I mean, that begs the question right now. I mean, I know we're going a little off script here, but think about it now. The kids that you're coaching now, that's a little different than the way you came up and the way you – you know, are used to, you know, handling your business. When you have to deal with these young guys, it's a whole different world now. How does Coach Starks handle something like these new school kids?
I mean, I tell you, it's difficult. You have to be careful how you come at them, stuff you say. You know, me, who's playing ball? Somebody MF me, that's nothing. That's Wolf. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not a big deal to me. So now you say something, they going to the president, they going to the athletic director, like, you know what I'm saying? It's a big deal. Some of these kids feel entitled, like, they just feel like they could do what they want to do just because of who I am. It's totally different, you know, it's totally different. And you just learn as you go. You know, I take every situation unique. I try to treat every student athlete different because they are different. You know, like, I might have to jump on one kid. I can't do that to the other one. You know, he might – tuck his tail, it's over. I lost him.
You're losing. You're losing.
So it's just different. You know, I just try to learn and take each season as it comes.
Well, you know what's it? I mean, and Seth, I'm sorry. I know we're off script here a little bit. But thinking about coaching in general, how you even got to this point of being the head man at Eureka College, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm looking at your coaching resume in a short period of time. It's been quite a wild ride. I mean, you know, a high school program that dissolved the team in Bakersfield, California. You were even in England coaching. How does Coach Starks get to this point right now as a coach?
Grinding, man. Grinding. I've been trying to get in the coaching business for a while now. What happened was I moved overseas to the Dominican Republic. And I started coaching the basketball team over there. So, and I'm talking about guys never played before, nothing. I'm talking about our first game, we're getting whacked like 70 to 10. And so for my two and a half years, we just kept getting better and better. And I like the grind. I like the progress to the point now, 70 to 10, 60 to 20, you know, 50 to 30. Oh, it was actually a competitive game. We lost 50 to 45. Like, okay. So I started liking the coaching. I started loving it, you know, so I realized I missed competing. I missed being involved in sports. So I came back around COVID, got my bachelor's from the University of Maryland, finished that up, and then I just worked on getting my master's from Georgetown University. And just during that process, I've been trying to grind, trying to get coaching gigs, high school, LaGrange College, another D3 in Georgia. I've been grinding. And you probably know how it is after playing. It's kind of like everybody say they got you. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to look out for you. But at the end of the day, anybody got you but yourself. You know, so I just been grinding. And now I guess other coaches, other people starting to see, like, oh, I guess he is serious. Now it's kind of like, hey, what you doing? Like, I just took a gig at this other spot. I'm not for this bounce like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I came for you. I reached out to you. You know what I'm saying? Everybody say tap into your sources. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, everybody's not going to look out for you like that. I'm different. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to do what I can. You know what I'm saying? But other guys kind of like, nah, they might see you as a threat. They might think they might lose the room because of your resume. A lot of different things, you know, goes into that. But
we definitely know that feeling. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? One thing I say about it, my dad told me this. He told me he's proud of me because at the end of the day, I did this myself. I'm talking about I'm online, fill an application. Even this gig now, people talking about, who you know up there? No one. I just grind. Wow. Took a lot of no's before I get a yes. You know what I'm saying? It took no callbacks before I started getting callbacks. You know, just, Brian, I just kept pushing.
It worked out. Yeah, that's awesome, man. To have a head coach's title is a pretty cool thing, regardless of level. Right. So, yeah, that's very cool. I do want to go back to something you kind of had mentioned. One of the things that makes you a good head coach and relatable to your guys is that you had some mistakes. You went through different things throughout your career. So I'm going to go back to something that happened during your Dolphins time. It was an on-field thing, but it was still something that probably made more headlines than it needed to. But so after 2010, you're selected to your first Pro Bowl, right, of your career. Then a few years later, following the 2012 season, again, you're a Pro Bowler, and now you're going into another opportunity to be an unrestricted free agent, and you don't work something out with the team. You guys can't come to an agreement on a long-term deal. They franchise you. You elect not to attend OTAs. Okay, cool. Regular season starts up, first game's at Cleveland. And if I go look at the box score, you're not listed as the starter, right? You're not listed as the starter in that first game, but you still deliver a Randy Starks performance. You split a sack with Cam Wake earlier, you're balling out. And then in the fourth quarter, you sack Brandon Whedon by yourself. It's like the sixth time we've gotten to him that day. And you kind of let the sidelines know about it. You let them know that you made a play. There might have been a gesture towards the sidelines. We don't know necessarily who the gesture was towards. Coach Philbin thought perhaps it was directed towards him. You said, no, that was between me and my teammates. We were just having some fun. Tell us what happened in that moment. And then I'm curious as to, and I guess it depends on how you answer it, but I'm curious as to how Coach Randy Starks would handle a player that maybe did something similar on his team.
Okay, so football is an emotional game, right? Sports in general, but it's an emotional game. So at this time, I sat out, came back. I wasn't a starter. I think we even brought in a nose tackle. But what happened was that Olivier Vernon, he had a good camp. I think he started coming to his own. So it's almost like, all right, we can't punish him from doing this thing. Who's next in line? All right, you think it's me? Cool. So I'm training, I'm working. And then the defensive line coach, Casey Rogers, he says something to me that even Cam Wake caught it. He was like, yeah, you played better, pissed off. So I kind of looked at him like, is he trying to say that? He's trying to piss me. Okay, cool. He's like, yeah, I kind of caught that too. Like, all right, cool. So we're going through. Now I'm not even worrying about it. At this time, I think I'm coming up on 100 straight starts type of thing. I'm not worried about it. So now I'm in the zone. I'm locked in. I think even the game, Casey Rogers, Coach Case, he tried to talk to me. Like, nah, this the guy you want? Cool. Like, I'm in the zone right now. And so we kind of got into it, blah, blah. Shoot, I went in there, got my sack, and it just came to me. Like, take that. Like, you know what I'm saying?
No, wait a minute. Take that. Explain that take that, man. I mean, you
don't remember it, Juice?
I mean, I do remember it. I know exactly, but I want to, like, you know, relive that experience. Of course I remember that. It was iconic, really.
Oh, man.
He just take that. That's not the way it came off when I saw it. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, that's how I felt, you know? I mean, to his credit, he didn't take it. He didn't feel disrespected about it. You know what I'm saying? It was cool after that. I mean, a lot of people didn't know what it came from. Like, I didn't realize how big it was until I came to the locker room. And one of the reporters came up to me, Omar. He was like, hey, man, you know they caught that, right? Everybody's already buzzing. I think Twitter was just started going, too.
Right,
like,
right.
It was already buzzing. I'm like, oh, I went from, like, 500 followers to, like, 50,000. Like, oh, this is how people get go viral. Okay.
Gotta this shake how I it up. Yeah, gotta shake it I up see, a little
oh,
bit.
Oh, oh yeah, but if a student athlete did that right now, I'd probably make a run or something like that. But it's motion. Because in the day, I don't want to – you want to have control of you guys, of your team in some way. You don't want to let it get out of hand, but at the same time, you don't want to take away who they are as a person and what drives them. So right. It's kind of like one of those balances you have to do. If it's something that happens every game, that's a problem, right? If it's something that doesn't normally happen, kind of shocking out of the characters, kind of like, all right, talk to them, see what's up, you know. It's football, man. We don't have it all there. You know what I'm saying? We're all kind of a little off.
Right.
You got to be off to want to get hit in the head.
You
got to
be off. If you ain't off, you can't play football. That's bottom line.
I mean, I love that.
Let me ask you this real quick, Randy, though, too. Now, when you talk about if it were to happen to Coach Starks, is there a totem pole of guys that might be able to get away with a little bit more than some other guys?
you treat everyone fair but not equal. Right. You know how that works, right?
Right.
Some people in the doghouse, you know what I'm saying? Some people there's always something, right? You see them, some guys run, they're nice, don't do everything right, do everything supposed to, and they had that one slip up. Well, you're not going to treat them guys the same. Right. You know? Just like I have an all pro, like he take care of business. I got somebody on practice squad. I'm not gonna, this is what it is. Like, right. We're not
the totem
crazy,
pole
but,
is real. The totem, you know, pole is real. Yeah.
You know, like, oh man, you just did that because he's an all pro. You're right. I did. You did. Yeah. You're right. This perks to come up being all pro, right? It's perks to become the pro bowler. It's perks. Franchise player. It's perks to come to it. This is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's so good.
He earned that. At least I feel he earned that, right?
Yeah.
Right? He
that's all that matters is how you feel. Yeah.
He showed him on Sunday.
Yeah. You know, well, to your point, you know, your perspective as a guy who played 12 seasons in the NFL, it's a unique perspective to have for these young men. And sometimes it probably works in their favor, and sometimes it probably doesn't because you know what it's supposed to look like. But it is really interesting. Yeah. Juice, this is one of the first times we've talked to a guy. We've talked to a few guys who've gone into coaching, but this is one of the first times we've talked to a guy who's an active head coach who played. So it's just a unique perspective.
Yeah,
I'm enjoying
it
for sure.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, it's great perspective. Remember, you're talking about young and old and, you know, old school kind of coach, new school kids. I love that whole conversation right now.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the places in my career that probably took me from just being good to being great is I played to the level of my competition. Mm. And so I was one of those guys, the competition's up here, I'm up here. If we're playing somebody that's down here, starting even from high school, I played down here. That's a bad characteristic they have. So it's for me to get pissed off, somebody, I felt like they blocked me, boom, get me going now. I was like, dang, why ain't you doing it from the beginning?
Yeah.
And so I think also that comes from being young as well and,
yeah,
you know, getting away with doing things like that.
Very interesting stuff.
Man, no doubt.
Well, I know you've got a lot that you got to figure out. I speaking of Twitter, I went on his Twitter, Juice. It's all – everything's now is he's telling me why Eureka College is a great place to be. He's out there. He's hustling. You're recruiting. I know that you've got those responsibilities.
Gotcha.
So we won't keep you much longer, but we end every episode the same way. And while I know that defensive tackles, although you played some end here as well, that you guys aren't necessarily known.
He said he had some third down. He has some third down opportunities.
Big anywhere in the line. What you need, coach? What you need?
I love it. Well, typically a defensive tackle is not known for their 2-minute drill prowess, but as you said, you can play anywhere on the line. And as a head coach, we know that you're going to be prepared for any scenario. So we're going to let you get back to doing your thing, but right now we're going to put you through the fish tank 2-minute drill. We're going to throw some quick hitting questions for you. Look at the eyes. The eyes always get big. We're going to some quick questions for you. You answer them however you want. We'll kind of have 2 minutes rolling and then we'll be good to go. Okay. So Juice, you can kick it off. 2-minute drill starts now.
All right. You ready, Randy?
No choice.
All right.
He's in too deep.
I know that's right. He's in. He's too deep in the tank right now. All right. Your first ever NFL game was against the Miami Dolphins, and your first NFL tackle was a sack. Do you remember which Miami Dolphins quarterback you took down?
Feely?
AJ Feely. That's right.
AJ Feely. There it is. All right. Good. Love it. Okay. We know that when you played, especially when you were here with the Dolphins, you were a sneakerhead, man. You had a collection. We know you were a big Jordan brand guy for sure. What were your favorite pair of shoes that you ever owned?
At that time, probably some red bottoms.
Oh.
He had
he's wearing red bottoms, dog.
Miami had look part. I, you know what I'm saying? You know what it is?
It's the Maryland. It's that Maryland Terps in. That's what
that's
it is.
That's what's up, man. All right. Okay. We spoke about your neighbor earlier. Who is the coolest Randolph Jr. To ever play for the Miami Dolphins? Let me repeat that. Who was the coolest Randolph Jr. to ever play for the Miami Dolphins? Is it Randolph Channing Crowder Jr. or Randolph Starks Jr.?
Randolph Starks Jr.
Not even a question, right? Not even a question.
I wasn't going to let you finish.
Hey, if you had said him first, there's a reason why your name was second. Too funny.
Everybody interrupt the whole thing.
All right, well, he's moving this thing right down the field, which is a good thing because this one might take a little bit more time. Well, you got your feet wet in the coaching world with your son's basketball team. We know you were a hooper in high school. If you had to put together the best squad that you could ever put together, but you could only draft guys who were your former Miami Dolphins teammates, so the best basketball squad. I want to know who your starting five is. They have to be pulled from your former Miami Dolphins teammates.
Deion Jordan. Sean Smith. Jason Ferguson.
Big Ferg.
Jason Taylor. How many is that?
It's four. It's a big squad. It's four.
Are you on the squad, Randy?
Am I on the squad?
Yeah.
I'm on the squad.
Okay, right, I mean, there Randy it Starr. Is.
Hey, yourself on the squad, man.
That's come the two-minute drill. I was like,
I thought I was a GM or something. I don't know. I'm a GM.
You're a player, coach, GM. You're doing it all, man. I want to get 20 and 12. I want to wake up with 20 and 12. I'm looking at this squad. This is a tall, long, athletic squad. I know Big Ferg is playing in the paint. I guess Sean's going to be running point.
Sean?
Yeah, okay. Sean Smith's running point. Although, you know, good luck. JT might try to do it too, Juice. We've seen that move.
Yeah, man, JT, he's wishy-washy in the game, man. You know how he is, bro. You know, I didn't want to get into him. He might kick the basketball into the neighbor's yard again.
Randy didn't
love
see
it.
All that
passion.
Stuff.
Yeah. You know,
the passion is there. The passion is there. Randy, this was so much fun, man. I truly appreciate it. We wish you nothing but success at Eureka College. Can't wait to see how you thank do you. There and developing young men and just how your coaching career continues to progress.
Appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me.
Man, thanks for diving in, Randy. It was awesome.
Have fun. Thank you.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Just like Drew said, thanks for diving into the fish tank presented by iHeartRadio. Be sure to follow us on whatever streaming platform you're using, and don't be afraid to rate the show or leave us a comment. We love your feedback. And remember, you can find us as well as Drive Time with Travis Wingfield and all of our international partners on MiamiDolphins.com.